Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Britt, and I am alcoholic. Hello. Let's see here. So I am from Minneapolis, Minnesota. My sobriety date is December the 4th of 2007. And it is an honor to be up here today. I'm super excited to be at the World Conference. This is awesome. This is my first one. Now, I will also say that I am not deaf, I am not hard of hearing, and I sign about three sentences poorly. So I did learn how to fingerspell because of a bookmark at a library when I was in fourth grade, and for whatever reason it had all of the hand signs, and I memorized it at 10, and I had no idea what that would mean in my life later on. So what I want to talk about is, you know, there's a line in the book that we all know is much more prophetic than it was probably intended at the time. There's a line that says, we are people who normally would not mix, right? And we all know from a history that at the time, the first 100 that wrote that book were actually quite similar in socioeconomic status, in class, in race, in a lot of things, in gender for the most part. And yet that phrase has been much more than it was originally intended. And so with that in mind, you know, when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 24, so I was pretty young. I didn't feel like I was done drinking. And I remember being told to go out to fellowship, or it was suggested to me to go out to fellowship with some women that were 15 years older than me that didn't look very cool. And I went out and I remember thinking, these are people that are not my people. And as I started to go out and I learned about this word called fellowship, and what came to mind was church ladies and Kool-Aid and brownies. And what happened was I went out to eat with a bunch of people older than me, and I will never forget, they had, we went out to this restaurant. And I was always very bitter about having to spend money in general with anything to do with people in AA. And we got pizza with anchovies. And I remember sitting in this stool surrounded by people talking about things that I just didn't I connected with alcoholism, right? Like I got that. But the general conversation, I was so uncomfortable. I was like, I don't connect. And yet I stayed, and yet it became this place that I called my home, right? And I did find connections with people, and I was, for the most part, the same race, the same socioeconomic status, in the same urban area. I got sober in Chicago. We really did have a lot in common, and it really was quite easy for me to eventually connect with those people. And so I say that because I just had a couple of barriers, most of which were in my head when it came to connecting with people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my experience has been that folks in the deaf community and the hard of hearing community have a whole lot more things that serve as barriers. And so that's what I'm here to talk about today. Is I've had the experience of sponsoring someone who is deaf for about 2.5 years. And he is actually up here on this panel, and you'll hear from him last. It's Hunta, right over there. And that was not in my plan. You know, when I was like, I'm going to sponsor people, I expected to have this gaggle of women that looked like me that were following my directions. And that has never happened. But so I found myself in Minnesota about 3 years ago, and I was working someplace, and it was at a school, and Hunta attended that school, and Hunta attended this meeting that I also went to. Hunta wasn't sure if he was alcoholic, but he kept seeing me around. Now, I didn't speak sign language, but there was, you know, just a couple of meetings a week in Minneapolis, or in the area, where there were some ASL interpreters, and there's a treatment center that kind of funnels some folks that are deaf and hard of hearing into the cities. And I think that's kind of how there's a concentrated population of folks that are deaf and hard of hearing there. So Hunta approaches me, after a meeting, and through the interpreter asks if I would sponsor him. And I was very uncomfortable. You know, I don't know how to speak sign. I don't speak your language. And, you know, of course I was taught to be a friendly person in AA, so I would say hello. And I would stare for a moment and hold eye contact, and then I would back away and go talk to someone because it's easy, because I can communicate with my voice and with my ears, right? And, but I was taught to say yes in AA, and so I did. And I had no idea what was going to happen, but I had these ideas of like, this is what it means to do sponsorship. So we met for coffee, and I was taught to, you know, try not to use technology. Because there's a spiritual thing that happens between the pen and the paper. And so I was like, we're going to sit here with a notebook and we're going to write out things to each other. And that got really hard on my wrist. and I was also like, you're going to figure out a way to call me, right? Like I was very rigid with what I expected if you were going to be my sponsee. And Hunta kind of sort of obliged, but also said, there are some things I'm going to need from you. You remember this. So anyway, I'm not going to go into the entire story, but we both had to adapt to what it meant to communicate. And, you know, I still sometimes send this to my hearing sponsees, but I don't sponsor in text, right? Like you pick up the phone if you need to talk to me. Turns out I do sponsor in text to people that are deaf, because that's the primary way of communicating if you're not face-to-face. So I guess what I want to mention, so here's the thing. We don't speak the same language, and yet we were able to successfully work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would love to tell you that I got inspired and I enrolled in a bunch of ASL classes and then I became fluent and we rode off into the sunset of recovery. But, you know, my life was busy. I took one community ed class and I forgot most of it. And sometimes Hunta taught me some different words and I tried, but it was not in the plan for me to learn that stuff. But some practical things that we did, because I guess this is what I want to say, is if someone who is deaf or hard of hearing in your community, and I guess I imagine that a lot of folks in this room are deaf and hard of hearing, and you might be in a community where there are not many of you, you still have the opportunity to recover. It's just going to require getting pretty uncomfortable on both ends, right? In a lot of ways, we self-centered, self-seeking, full of fear alcoholics walk into AA no matter what, and we are looking, our alcoholism is looking for the differences. It's looking for the reason that we don't belong. And folks that have real barriers to access the hearing world have a whole lot more reasons to have that going on in their head. Well-meaning hearing alcoholics often blow people off without meaning to. And I watched that happen, and I have done that because I was thinking about myself or I was busy. And fortunately, I had someone in my life who told me exactly when I was doing that. You know, Hunter would say these things like, you don't pay attention with your eyes. You only pay attention with your ears. And so you're really distractible at meetings. And you know, I'm trying to have a conversation with you and someone says your name and you turn around and walk away. I had no idea I was doing that, right? So like I had to learn slowly to make this deliberate effort to be in that moment staring and trying to fumble through a conversation in text and through my finger spelling with Hunta in those meetings. And so we have all these reasons to kind of skirt out of being uncomfortable because we're thinking about ourselves. And yet if we can walk through that, we might be much more helpful. And the other thing I'll mention, I guess identity. So we human beings, categorize. It's by nature, right? It's part of the human makeup, is that we walk into a room and we need to figure out what category things belong in and people belong in. And that is another part of my experience working with Hunta, and I imagine he'll talk about this, is, you know, we are also not the same gender. And there's kind of a binary way of language in AA, you know, men sponsor men, women sponsor women. Don't talk to someone of the opposite sex in your first year of sobriety. And while I don't know how well any of us follow that stuff, that rigidity doesn't always work. And so I learned with Hunta a couple months into working together that we were different genders. The barrier between in our language kind of made it so that I didn't even realize that at first. And it made a whole lot more sense when I was like, oh, I'm sponsoring a dude. Oh. And that was okay. We worked the steps together. You know, that was the primary thing that we were together to do. And so this whole business of needing to categorize to make sense of things and to gravitate towards only people that have the same identity as me is something that I have actively worked on. And let's see. And so I want to, I guess, also say some practical things that I did. I think I started a sentence a couple minutes ago, I didn't finish, about what you do if you might be in a community where you come across someone who's hard of hearing or deaf, and you see that they need help and you do not speak that language. So like I said, what we did at first was we met and we had a notebook. And that didn't work all that quickly. So the next thing that we did was we brought laptops and we would meet for sponsorship once a week. I would have Hunta check in with me through text. And actually I was just chatting with someone before the meeting and she was brought up a great point. So I'm going to steal the line if that's okay. You know, it's in the same language. It's hard enough to actually hear what your sponsor is saying. And so there's a whole lot of miscommunication that can happen when you don't speak the same language. And we have had our share of not understanding each other in text, and getting wrong ideas, but we worked through it. And so we would meet with a laptop and I would, you know, ask questions, you know, let's check in. How's your, you know, how's this going? What meetings are you going to? How's that inventory? And then he would fill that in. And then I would comment some more, right? Like we would just kind of go back and forth, or we would find ways to tell stories just sitting and looking at each other. And during some of, so for his fifth step, for example, we hired an interpreter because we didn't want to miss anything. And so we both pitched in equal money and we paid. And that was also something that was a little counter to my like, no, 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 this is for fun and for free. I don't want to write a check. but we did it because it mattered. And I also had a ground crew, or have a ground crew where, you know, the folks that I sponsor, we meet and we either read the book or we, you know, read some pamphlet of varying degrees of interest. And we hired an interpreter for that. And actually the interpreters have been incredibly gracious. They, oftentimes were just operating on a, whatever you, you know, we'll just pitch in. And so my sponsees would drop a couple dollars and I would write a check for $15 and they would spend their Sunday mornings with us. I think that interpreters are amazing folks and, really appreciate that you're here. And so we fumbled through. And trying to think about some of the other ways. I guess the other thing that I have come to understand, how I have benefited from this relationship is, I mean, a lot of ways. And I'm no longer Hunta's sponsor. We came to a point where it made sense for Hunta to work with someone else. We're still friends, which also that can happen. You know, you don't need to never call again. Or never communicate again if sometimes those roads just make sense to split. But you know, I learned a little bit about the deaf community and the history of folks that are born into deafness, and I had no idea. And that was not in my plan. You know, I have all these important things that I need to do, and I didn't put that on my list. And yet there it was. And something else that I think is interesting, and I'm very curious to hear the experiences that are shared up here in a little bit, but, you know, our alcoholic egos often need some shrinking, and we often recoil to being told that we're wrong, right? But it's exactly what we need typically, because we're walking around the world thinking we don't affect other people as alcoholics. Now, and the deaf community has been oppressed and silenced for generations and has been very spread apart. And so I know part of the empowerment of ASL and of the deaf community is that deaf folks aren't wrong, right? Like, we have been silenced for generations, and please don't tell me I'm wrong. But that doesn't exactly work with the alcoholic. And so we work together, Hunta and I, on when that is true and when that is not true. And on an individual situational basis, right? It is, because if I were to say you're right always, I would also not be helpful. And so that was a really hard thing for me to navigate, because I wanted to honor the experience of deafness and the reality as it plays out, and how silenced, how silencing that can be. And I also wanted to help Hunter recover. So, those are, I guess, some of the main things that I wanted to talk about. And so, like I said, to kind of make this point, and then I'll sit down. I think so much of the steps and so much of what we learn to do in AA is getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And we do that through our recovery. We do that doing service commitments that we don't really want to do and that are humbling, or that, you know, we think we don't have time to do. But there are also these other things that aren't necessarily written down in the book or in the literature or in the meeting script that are the real work of AA. And that includes things like sitting down with someone who's, you don't speak the same language, and just connecting as a human and connecting as an alcoholic. Because there is real suffering, and if you have a solution, it is your duty to share it. Thank God. So with that, I think I'm going to open up the floor to the other folks on the panel. Thank you.
Please help me welcome Loretta.
Thank you. My name's Loretta, and I am an alcoholic. I am from Franklin, Indiana. That's a little south of Indianapolis, Indiana.
Duh.
My sobriety date is June 21st, 1990. If you calculate my birth date, and that I've never yet had a legal drink in my life. The reason why I say that for young people to have hope that they can get this in their program also, like I did. I've had numerous ear surgeries, probably 10 or 15 before I was the age of 10. My hearing in my left ear was 95% gone. In the right, it's about 45% gone. So I haven't learned sign language yet. I'm trying. It's very difficult. I'm more hands-on, and I would have to get a tutor probably to help me. I grew up in an alcoholic home. Our family got together quite often, and their main thing was to drink. My grandmother's remedy until she passed away 3 years ago was a hot toddy. A hot toddy will fix everything. growing up, I learned that alcohol would fix almost everything. When I was drinking very, very heavily towards the end of my drinking, on February 3rd of 1990, I picked up the telephone. Never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. Never heard of treatment centers. Just picked up the phone and I called a wonderful lady that works central office in Louisville, Kentucky. TD is a very short lady, very sweet, very kind to everyone except me. She'll tell you she's always been the kindest person on the telephone. She was not that day to me. You know, I told her that I think I'm ready to do something about my drinking. I don't know what. I had not acquired my driver's license yet until I got sober. I said, I'd like to go to one of them A&A meetings. And she said, well, I'll tell you where it is. And I said, you don't understand. I don't drive. She said, so? I said, but I can't get there. And she said, you walk miles for your drink? You can walk miles to stay sober. And she hung up the telephone. She's never hung up on anyone before or since then except me. I walked into that club that day. And I felt at home. I was at that club from probably 6 a.m. to probably midnight and still sitting on the porch. I was scared to death to be alone. I was scared to death in my own skin. All I knew was I didn't want to drink, and people like me were there and they were staying sober. I went to lots and lots of meetings with lots and lots of old and old timers. I walked into my first meeting and it was very smoke filled. My perception was a bunch of 80 or 90 year olds sitting around complaining about their women smoking cigarettes. Most of them probably were, but they were staying sober. I continued to go and hang out at the club. Because at this time I was living with my grandmother, who I was her drinking buddy, and I knew I wasn't safe at home. The people in the meetings welcomed me open arms every time. I had a few very old timers that told me I spilt more than you drank. And I got smart at this point, because I heard it so often, that I said, well, if you would have not spilled so much, you wouldn't have been hating for, you would have been here sooner. You know, if you spilled so much alcohol, just if you would have drank it, you would have got here a little quicker. That made sense to me. They didn't like that. You know, they weren't used to young whippersnappers back-talking them. What they said goes. I got with a younger lady who introduced me to the young people's meeting. The first time I walked into a PAW conference, which is Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous, I felt at home. But it wasn't just young people. It was people of all ages trying to stay sober on a daily basis. I felt at home. People just like me trying to have fun, trying to stay sober one day at a time and not knowing how to do it. Now, I still went to my regular meetings where I was the youngest person there. In most of my meetings at my home group, I'm the youngest person there still. And a lot of times I'm the one that has the most sobriety, too. I don't know how that goes. Sometimes it just goes. I got very, very involved with Kentucky Young People and Alcoholics Anonymous because that's where my family is from, is Louisville, Kentucky. I got sober there. When I was about 5 years sober, I moved to Indianapolis, Indiana. I had a young son at this time, and my parents lived there, and I knew I had nowhere else to go, so I had to go there. There's a joke about, you know, Kentuckians don't cross the bridge to get into Indiana, and I thought I would never cross that bridge to come to Indiana. To me, it was the best thing that I ever did. When I first got there, I was still using my sponsor from Louisville, and I was staying sober, but I was miserable because I was really sponsoring myself. Now, I got to a point where I didn't call her. I didn't report to her what was going on. Occasionally, I'd go back to Louisville to go to meetings where people knew me, but I didn't want people to get to know me in Indianapolis. It scared me. I felt like I was starting all over again. I was a newcomer, but just with some time at this point. And I was just frightened again in my own skin. And it took me about 3 years to get involved and to get another sponsor after living there. And I picked a home group that is my home group today. It's called the Bring It All Group. It meets at noon on Wednesdays. If you're ever in Indianapolis on the south side, we welcome you. The south side of Indianapolis is the most hugging, most friendliest people I've ever met in my life. You do not walk into that meeting and not get a hug. You do not walk out of that meeting and not get a hug. And for a long time, that's what I needed. I just needed to be hugged and told I'm okay today. No matter what was going on in my life, it was okay. That's what I always searched for when I was drinking, to be okay. I didn't want to be different, but I just needed to be okay at the moment. And that's what alcohol did for me. After coming into the rooms, that's what people did for me, just like me. They made me feel welcome, and they loved me until I could love myself. I got really, really involved. I had got a sponsor that's very hardcore. I'm very deeply involved in our area, in our district also. And I started going to meetings outside of the meetings that I normally went to. And I got really, really involved because I knew when I was in Louisville, Kentucky, service work saved my butt. It made me accountable. It helped me learn about me in this program. And I became a GSR in our district. And then I became a GSR for another group in our district after my time moved on. You know, I am the DCM of our district, and it is the most strenuous job I've ever had, sober or not. Luckily, I am on disability, so I'm able to reach out and go to more meetings. I'm able to reach out and be there for my family now. You know, my mother, I left home when I was 15 and didn't even call my family until my 18th birthday and said I'm alive and hung up again. And they did not hear from me till I was 19. I'm not proud of that. But that's where my alcoholism took me. My mother does not have to sit up at night crying, not knowing where her daughter is. She did that for a lot of years. This relationship has gave me my family back, taught me how to be a daughter, taught me how to be a mother, taught me how to do the next right thing. Because a lot of times, even if coming in and getting sober, I didn't know what the next thing was besides just not drinking. There was days when just not drinking was all it could be at that time. I have a 20-year-old son who's grown up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, who's never seen his mother drink, that is traveling his own road right now, but he knows where help is if he makes it back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's very special to me because that's the age I got sober at. You know, I have two wonderful stepchildren that I consider and call my own today. They're so special that one of my stepsons has three children, and he's moved in back home with his three kids. And his girlfriend has three kids, and a couple months after he moved in, she moved in with three kids also. So, needless to say, I try to go to a lot more meetings than I used to. Having six kids, seven and under, can get trying at times. I try to be grandma, but I also try to let the parents deal with their kids, because I know it's important that they learn how to be parents and discipline the kids. You know, there was times when my home group takes meetings in to our county jail in Johnson County in Franklin, Indiana. And I was the chairperson with that for a couple years. There was nights when it saved my butt because my kid was doing the things that I was doing at his age. I didn't know where he was. I didn't know if he was alive or safe. And I had somewhere to go that night to talk to people just like me. There was numerous times I did not want to go into that jail one more time and talk to people just like me. But it made me accountable and it saved my life. Because there was times I walked in there and thinking, after this, I'm just going to go drink. And when I walked out of there, I felt better. I felt saner, and I was able to go home that night and lay my head on the pillow and be okay. You know, God has put several special ladies into my life in different periods of their sobriety to remind me of where I was and what I went through, especially at the age when I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to help sponsor a girl that's 20, and I see so much in her right now just like me. I need to remind myself of what I was like, because the further I am from a drink, the harder it is to be reminded that my life was crappy when I was drinking. You know, I have the blinders on sometimes that some of us old timers get, that we forget how it was when we got sober. You know, we forget that if we pick up a drink, it's not going to solve anything. If we pick up a drink today, that it might not be crappy that first time, but it's going to get there. My disease tells me every day that maybe it can be different today. Maybe you know what to do today, and it'll be different. When I go to a meeting, when I talk to another person, whether it's inside or outside of these rooms, it helps me get out of me. The worst place that Loretta can go today is in Loretta's skin, and to sit down and think that I'm okay today. You know, my favorite page in the big book is page 164. I have a very smart lady in Indianapolis tell me the definition of trudging is walking on our path with a purpose. That page says we will trudge the road to happy destiny, and we will surely meet some of you as we are on this path together. That makes so much sense to me, because there's times when I am trudging, but I have help with people just like me today. But if I forget the trudging that we do, I will pick back up. I will think it's okay today. And all them yets that I have not done will become yeses in my life. The only way I know how to prevent them is to hit my knees in the morning, say my meditations, say my prayers, and work on my disease on a daily basis. That's something I would never see even 20 years ago. my family life is so much better than what I could ever imagine. My grandmother was, she only had one granddaughter and one grandson. She was a huge enabler in my life. And I drank with her. When I stopped drinking, she thought I was lying because I always lied when I was younger and when I was drinking. You know, she never saw me pick up a drink. That's amazing that any alcoholic, any one of us can just go through one day and not drink. That's a miracle. We're all miracles today sitting in this room. You know, this is my first international conference, and it's wonderful. I want to thank our chairperson today. And any time I can do anything for my disease, I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for that. And with that, I am truly, truly blessed. Thank you.
And now I would like to introduce Hunter, and we're going to reverse this process just a little bit. Hunter's going to sign, and his interpreter is going to speak for him.
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay, seems our technology problem is solved now. We good? Hello, I'm Hunta. I am an alcoholic. I am from Minnesota. Yay! My date of sobriety is March 24th, 2012. I'm so honored to be asked to speak. Thank you to all of you for sharing. And thank you guys for coming. I hope that you guys share the message to other hearing, deaf, share the AA message. So how I came to AA, I moved to Minnesota 3.5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now. So I moved, was it because of sobriety? No. I thank my former partner for bringing me to AA. And I met my partner through my former sponsor, Brett. So, of course, it was awkward trying to converse, you know, how to teach, how to communicate, how to make this work. I mean, did I think that the 12 steps were going to work for me through this means of communication? No. But, boy, 2.5 years, that was a rich experience. What Brett taught me, you know, going through each step and explaining what it meant, because we as deaf people, you know, do we understand the English? No, we don't understand the English, you know, but she taught me everything, what each of the 12 steps means. I mean, she was able to expound on all of it. I mean, I just thank her so much. And I taught her deaf, you know, culture, how to communicate on the laptop. I mean, you know, anytime I would go somewhere, I would take her along with me. I mean, we'd had a great time, and to this day, we're still friends. Yeah, and it's all thanks to her. So that's my story. My parents were addicted to drugs and alcohol. So, and like many other deaf people, you know, we're alone and we feel isolated all the time. That's how I started drinking. My drinking increased. I just isolated myself and my drinking just doubled. You know, and I was neglected. You know, they would go off to be with their friends. And sometimes I would go hang out with my friends who were my deaf friends. You know, they would go off and I would want to drink some more. We kind of separated. You know, we went our own ways. So I went to 3 different schools for the deaf. I still felt alone in each one of them. I felt isolated. My life, you know, with alcohol and drugs was just truly a mess. You know, I mean, my family, you know, drank, so it was okay. You know, I thought this is used, it'll make me feel good, but I was isolated. I mean, I was really, really, really miserable. I was alone. So I went into AA. I had two interpreters, one on Monday and one on Friday. But I felt like it wasn't fair. You know, I didn't have access to, like, hearing people. You know, I could, you guys can go to any meeting. You can go to anywhere you want to go. You can go. But for the deaf, you know, for me, I could go on Mondays and Wednesdays, and that was it. But I wanted more. How could I continue with my sobriety? How? Mondays and Wednesdays, and that's it? That's not enough. So I got involved. I fought for an interpreter, so I got Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and Sundays. Finally. So all people could go to any meet, or go to a meeting any day of the week with an interpreter. Yay. So I felt better. It helped their sobriety. It helped, you know, I would like, come on, it'll help you with your sobriety. You can go to Minnesota. If you want to go to AA, look online. They have interpreters ready to go. Go. See? Share it with others. Share it with other alcoholics in your area. I'll be happy to tell you about this after the meeting. You can come up and I'll give you all of the resources. But it's tough having to fight for what you need. It's not my first experience getting an ASL interpreter. You know, money's always an issue. It's always money, money. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, you know, it just infuriated me. You know, it made me mad. I'm deaf. I need access. I need an interpreter to be able to access. I need to be able to see the interpreter. You know, the hearing, you know, speaker, you guys can hear. I need to be able to communicate. But it was always money, money, money. So fighting, that's how I got the interpreters. You know, for any of the events, you know, AA events, like, for example, the convention, the international convention here, we have interpreters. Finally, thank you. Thank God. I'm really thankful. It's because of AA. Is it because of what AA did? No, it's because of all of you advocating and advocating for what we need. We need all of you. If it weren't for you, how would we survive? How would we stay sober? How would we know about AA? But thanks to you, not me, thanks to all of you, now your job is to pass the message to other people, to teach, to educate them. Fight for why ASL is important and interpreters are important in our culture. In Alcoholics Anonymous, there are those who suffer. There's deaf who are suffering, who are dying because they feel alone. There's no one to help. They don't have accessibility to interpreters. There's nothing. How do hearing people get involved? Welcome them. Be there. Write notes. That's how you get help. It's a process. That's exactly what I went through with Britt. Now, I am deaf. I'm black. I'm transgender. I have a male sponsor. I sponsor men. What's similar is Alcoholics Anonymous. We're all alcoholics. I don't care about your identity, my identity. I mean, the deaf community is right here. You see them. They're right here. Please say hi. Please welcome them. Don't be afraid to interact. I mean, for a newcomer, for a deaf person, welcome them. So how do you communicate with a person who's deaf? You can, well, in Minnesota, we have whiteboards that you can write, you know, available to use. There's also ASL interpreters. You can write on the whiteboard. You can text. I mean, technology, you know, is everybody's got a phone. Flyers. You know, before there was no ASL interpreter, so they added interpreters. But when you announce that, if you announce that there's going to be an interpreter, then deaf people will come. They'll know to go there. What I went through was very frustrating. I went, my first year of sobriety, I fought and fought for what I needed. You know, in deaf culture, not for what deaf people need. I kept fighting and fighting until finally I got it. I mean, it was a process. In Minnesota, we're still working on video for having the speakers interpreted. It mentions anonymity. You know, you can't advertise, you know, you can't say your first or your last name, but you don't realize that's an ASL too. I mean, how do you communicate in ASL? How do you, you know, with these audio recordings, where are ours? We're fighting for that. It's still a work in progress. We'll let you know. You know, we're hoping to get some, you know, video recorded message, and that's in AA, not only here, but everywhere internationally, because we need something to watch. We need to hear other stories and be inspired and understand. There's more and more people in Minnesota. You know, I'm a speaker. There's others who are speakers, deaf speakers, which is really cool to be able to share our stories, share the other words. It's your job to carry the message, to teach other alcoholics that we still welcome you. We socialize with hearing people. We teach them sign language. Teach them sign. Talk to them, right? I mean, you know, you can still, you know, mime and gesture. As Britt said, it was uncomfortable at first, but with a little bit of patience. Unfortunately, you have to be patient. I know, we're alcoholics. We hate being patient, but sorry, you have to. I guess before I finish, I want to say something important to you guys. All of us in AA, this is thanks to all of you who've taught me to accept everyone. It doesn't matter if you're deaf or hearing. If you happen to meet a deaf person, say hi and say welcome. Give them a hug. You know, write something to them, text them, exchange your phone numbers. When I go back to Minnesota, I want to just think of AA and think of this conference and just be so thankful for it. Please, welcome. Don't push people off. Welcome everyone, please. I guess that's it. Thanks for allowing me to share my message.